Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is Jesse. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Jesse.
We love you, Jesse. Lots and lots.
Thank you, guys. I love you too. God, it's so welcoming to be here. It is an honor and a pleasure to be at an event like this and to share my experience. And I want to thank everyone that has had anything to do with putting on this conference. I know what it's like to put on a conference and the pain and anguish and resentments that go on with that, but also the spiritual growth that comes out of it. So congratulations on putting on a fantastic event, you know. And note that I want to thank the speakers last night. Roof and Lindsay were amazing. On Thursday night, before we were getting ready to leave, I had one of those moments where I was like, if I wasn't supposed to be there, I just wouldn't go. You know, like, it's a great weekend at my work to make money, and I don't know anyone in Arizona. I just don't want to go, you know. And last night when I sat down in the meeting, and then, like, you know, we started doing all the young people stuff, like, it fired it up again, you know. And I was like, God damn, thanks. Like, I'm so glad that I'm here, you know. And, you know, my level of enthusiasm sometimes kind of goes in and out, you know, and it got fired back up last night. So it's really good to be here talking about, like, one of the coolest subjects in AA that we don't really talk about too much. So, you know, there's two pages in the book, essentially, about a page and a half, that talks about this specific matter, you know, the straight pepper diet. I love pepper. I like salt too, but I'm big into pepper, you know. And there's a couple main things that I think are really, really important, you know. Like it says, we're not to be the arbiter of anyone's sex life. And there's very strong opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous and a lot around this subject. And I remember hearing a lot of things like, don't date in your first year, and putting all these things around dating and relationships, and, like, you know, how willing are you to stay sober and all this. And, you know, like, as far as I know, I don't see anything in the book about, like, not dating for your first year. I think that's pretty rough for someone that's trying to get sober to tell them that they can have sex too, you know. It's that's rough. From my experience and what I've seen is that you can do whatever you want in sobriety as long as you're willing to pay the tab, you know. And that tab can be a lot more than you think before you get yourself into a situation that can be a little bit precarious. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes throughout my recovery, and definitely before I started with it. And, you know, like, the inventory taught me a lot about, like, who I am. When I showed up, like, I had absolutely no idea who I was as a person. And I was so fucking scared. And what I've gotten to see through going through the steps, and especially since I've completed the steps and started another round, was, like, the spiritual nature of my disease, this underlying fear that dominates my life, this fear that I'm not good enough and I'll never match up to anyone ever. I've seen how that manifests, you know. And I also see, like, you know, been going through the inventory, like, what I will do through judgment, through talking shit, through my actions, just through my thoughts and my subconscious prayers, what I'll do to try to offset that, you know. And you know, when people say was an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, like, that's me to the fullest, you know. I think I'm a piece of shit, so I try to tear you down in my head to try to make myself feel better, you know. And what I've seen is that getting acceptance from a woman, especially in a sexual way, like, is above all the biggest thing for me. Like, I feel okay. I'm okay. She loves me. How can I not be okay? Like, this woman wants to be with me right now, you know? And I've made a lot of decisions based around that, you know, that I kind of regret. And, you know, something that Lindsay said last night that it just fucking hit me so much, and something that I've heard before and I really believe to be true, is that, like, me alone, naked with God, is not enough. You know, I always need something else. I need to buy a new hoodie. I need a girlfriend, you know? I need to be making money. I need to have, like, these titles in service. You know, I need all this stuff. And when you take all that away, and it's just me and God, it's not enough, you know? And that's something that I've seen people on the other side of that where, like, they're okay, and they've got that inner serenity and that peace of mind where they're just okay with their God, you know? I kind of feel like I'm in an area where I don't have much room for stretching the truth. I've got the woman that I want to spend the rest of my life with in this room, my sponsor, you know? And they are two different people. I swear to God. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are highlighted in my book. There's a lot of things that are underlined. There's a couple things that are double underlined. And there's one sentence in the book that is double underlined, circled with stars around it. It says, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves harder into helping others. And that's the main thing. This program, these 12 steps, are about helping everyone else, you know? And, like, no matter what I get into in my own life, that is always the answer to get out of it, you know? Like, no matter what, you know? And, like, I'm not a hardcore guy with this, you know? And I came from kind of a school of, like, I'm going to lay out to you what my experience has been and what these steps are, and I will help you through it, but this is all up to you, and you can do whatever you want, you know? And the one time that I'll get, like, kind of aggressive with my guys is when they're just bitching about, like, really small stuff, and I say, go help someone. You know, like, get off the phone with me, pray about it, and go help someone. And then call me back and tell me that you feel the same way, you know? Because that has never happened for me where I've done that and I've felt the same way, you know, and been doing this whole self-pity thing. You know, and getting the experience of getting to go through the traditions has really helped out with this. And when I first showed up, like, there were just a lot of words on the wall. There were the steps, there were traditions, there were prayers, and it was all just on the wall. And I could read it, and I could say, I kind of understand that, you know, and, like, I think I just did that step in my head and whatever. But, like, when I actually sat down with someone and went through it and read our literature, that's where, like, it set into my heart, and I saw it apply to my life. You know, and with the second tradition, like, it tells me that, like, I am not the ultimate authority in my life. I am responsible for the actions in my life, but a God of my own understanding is responsible for the outcome, you know? And, like, in the relationship that I'm in, and within every relationship that I have in my life, like, it's not up to me what happens in that, you know? And my grand sponsor always says it's all about, what does he say? Negotiation and compromise. I was just testing you, man. He passed the test. You know, and like we can lay everything out on the table, and I can say, like, what do you think? What do you feel in your heart is the right thing here? You know, and then I can lay my side out, and we can come to an agreement. You know, and we can see how we live up to that agreement, and see, you know, where we need some spiritual progress and where we're doing all right. You know, at the fourth tradition, talking about autonomy, and essentially says that every group is autonomous and has the right to govern itself as long as it's not harming AA as a whole. And it's the same thing with my relationship, you know? Like, I have a certain amount of freedom and responsibility, and they go hand in hand with each other. I'm free to make the decisions that I want to make, you know, as long as they don't affect what we have as a whole, as a unit, you know? And what we have is a beautiful thing, you know, and I don't want to fuck that up. You know, and on the other side of that, like, I also have to allow that freedom and responsibility on the other end of the relationship, you know, and say, like, you're free to do what you want, you know, and I trust you and I love you. You know, I was talking about fear before, And I have this button on me, and me and my sponsor call it the fear button. And lots of things can just come up to me and press the fear button, you know? I can be fucking spiritually rejuvenated and living my life and loving my life. And then some person comes along and just says, I'm going to press the fear button in you today, you know? And lately I've had this attitude of like, if you motherfuckers would just act right, like, my life sober would be so much easier. But you guys don't work the fucking steps right, and you just, who knows what you do, you know? And it makes it really hard on me. I gotta fucking do all the dirty work. And recently I had the fear button pushed, and I acted out in a way that I wasn't proud of, you know. I said some things that I didn't want to say, and I became a person that I'd never seen before, you know, even drunk. Like, I'd never seen this person, and this anger and this tough guy. Like, I was like, I got a baseball bat in my car, I'm gonna show this motherfucker, you know. I'm like, that was never me drinking. I was never that person. I just had to do some step work around it, you know? And I got to make an amends to an individual that, like, as the book says, like, we find it harder to make an amend to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial. And I just took the bit in my teeth, as it says, and sat down with a man that I was not happy with, and I said, I feel bad for what I've done here, you know? I don't know. It's just amazing. Like, pain has always been the taproot of spiritual growth for me. And I have to get in a certain amount of pain to actually get my feet moving and really go back to the steps and to my God in this. I don't know. I didn't even know, I had no idea who I was as a human being when I showed up, you know. I didn't even know if I was ready to stop drinking, you know. I didn't want to live the way that I was living anymore. And I was open to trying something different. And then I found some attraction to a side of life that I didn't know was possible, you know. And then all of a sudden, here I am with 3.5 years sober. Doors have opened up that I didn't even know were there. I was kind of someone that always would see like a couple together and say, man, like, I guess that's just not for me. I guess like that kind of intimacy, that kind of love is just, it's there obviously, but like, I am just never I've never been in a relationship more than 3 months, you know? And it's the same fucking pattern every single time. It's like clockwork, you know? I've gotten to experience that now, you know? That started with developing a relationship with myself first, you know? I didn't want to get to know myself either, you know? Like, I was scared of who I was. I'm grateful for the people that put their hand out to me and said, we'll walk with you every step of the way, you know? And I get to do that for other people now. I I'm out of words. I don't know what to say. You're going to take this shit off the recording, right? I'm not afraid of who I am anymore, you know. I can be in front of a whole bunch of people that I don't know and be vulnerable, you know, and leave my heart on the line. And that's why I'm eternally grateful, you know. you know, I guess that's all I got to say. Thank you guys for being here and allowing me to be here, and don't fucking tell anyone about the new show. That's all I got.
Please help me welcome our second speaker, Carrie Ann. Carrie, where are you from? From Las Vegas. Hi, my name is Carrie Ann. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. From Las Vegas, who's hosting Wacky Paw this year. Gotta give my little shout out, wackypaw15.org. Tough act to follow. Thank you for starting us off. I thought maybe the reading would be in here since it's the topic of the meeting, but I guess since it's not, I would just like to start off by reading in the part in the book where it talks about a straight pepper diet, since that's why we're here. So it's on page 69, if you didn't know, and it's about the sexual inventory. Then we have the voices who will cry, well, it starts on the paragraph before. Now about sex. Most of us need an overhauling there, but above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One of the voices cries, sex is a lust and a lure of nature, a base of necessity and procreation. Thank you. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. Bam! We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We hardly would be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? And it goes on to say we put it on paper and who we hurt and unjustifiably arouse jealousy. And it's just a part of the inventory. And I'm just going to kind of share with you, like you would in a normal meeting, like what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, but more along those kind of lines. My sobriety date's December 31st, 2001. And I was 17 when I got sober the last time, and the first time I came in the rooms, I was 15. And I didn't have any issues walking in here. I wasn't like a 15-year-old girl selling my body. That's not my story. And so I didn't really like have an issue with these kinds of things when I first got sober, and I didn't pay any attention to it, and I didn't think like there was anything that I needed to like work on there, you know, like I just didn't really have anything to do with it. And when I first came in, I did a lot of the like 1, 2, 3, like swap a sponsor, 1, 2, 3, swap a sponsor. I was 15 years old. I didn't know if I wanted to be here. I didn't know if I had a problem. I didn't know if I was like you guys. I knew I didn't want to get sent away for a long time. And, so I stayed here, and I would just like to say it's like through working the steps and through like having people that love me anyways and through like having people that showed me the book and showed me like this is how you can identify with if you're an alcoholic. I definitely am an alcoholic. And so I just kind of went along my merry way, and I went to Icky Paw, the international conference, and I came back, and there was this guy who was, like, giving me the eye, right? And I was like, who is this guy? And he was, like, a newcomer, and he was living on the beach, and he didn't have shit. And we were in love. I was, yeah, I was 17 years old. My mom's also an Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless her. She tries not to be, like, codependent, but she totally is, and she let him move in with us, and then proceeded to kick us both out, and I didn't really see anything wrong with it. Like, I just thought that's how it was, you know. Like, a lot of my relationship ideals stem from, like, what I've seen in my life, and my mother and my father, and my father's always been a practicing alcoholic. I would come home to him strung out on the floor with a heroin needle, like, wondering why I was looking at him, and that just seems acceptable to me, you know. Like, that seemed like normal. And that's odd, you know, what I'm drawn to. And I think a lot of women can relate to that. And so, I don't know, things went well, and, you know, we got married, and, he would have done anything for me, anything in the whole world. And I did not want to live in Hawaii anymore, which is where I grew up, which is where I got sober. And I wanted to leave, and he didn't want to leave, and he left anyways with me, and we moved to Las Vegas. And through, like, what I know today and, like, through having a program in my life, like, I know, like, what we had was unhealthy, and I know that there's definitely a lot of places where I went wrong. And, like, what had happened is because it wasn't an issue when I came in, I didn't take the time to, like, look at, like, what my sexual ideal was. Like, I had no idea. I didn't know what things were important to me in a relationship. I thought, like, if somebody, like, liked me or, like, you were saying, like, if you have sex, like, you feel validated. For me, I drink just to change the way I feel. I like the effect produced by alcohol. And when I'm not putting alcohol in me anymore, I'll use anything else. And it doesn't matter if it's men, it doesn't matter if it's food, it doesn't matter if it's shopping, it doesn't matter what it is. I'll use whatever I can to feel better for that moment. And, so I hadn't really thought about it. I didn't know what a healthy relationship looked like from what I had in my, you know, growing up to base it off of. I didn't know that we were on this, like, path of destruction and that it wasn't well, and, I definitely wasn't working a program. I've been sober for a long time, but I've been kind of, like, off and on as far as, like, how excited I am for Alcoholics Anonymous, and, it's been on for the last, you know, 6 years, but there's times there where it's, like, you're in a new place and you don't know anybody and, like, you don't like how they do their AA there, and, if you've ever moved, you can relate. And so I wasn't practicing any principles in my, you know, like, all of my affairs. I wasn't doing any of these things, and I was just on a path of destruction. And I tried to keep my nose out of his business, and he ended up relapsing. And, I mean, that's what happens. He might not be an alcoholic. I'm not really sure. But he also decided to go be with somebody else. And so we, you know, we split up, and I started calling my sponsor, the sponsor that I got when I first moved there that I didn't call, that I just got because I could tell people that I had a sponsor. And we started working on some things and going through the steps again, starting from one, and we got to four, and I didn't want to, like, face it. There was, like, a lot of pain there, and I didn't want to look at anything. Like, I didn't want to look at my part. I didn't think I had a part. I totally played the victim. I totally thought it was, like, all his fault, and I had nothing. It had nothing to do with me. Like, he's the one that drank, and if he just didn't do that, like, everything would be fine. We were fine. I don't know what the problem is. And she told me to, like, give it a year. Like, those are her words, like, give it a year. And what I heard is, like, carry on, do whatever you want for a whole year, right? Like, I don't really think that's what she was going for, but that's what I took it as, and I ran with it. And for the next year, I proceeded to cause a lot of chaos and harm and destruction in a lot of different people's lives, relationships and or not relationships. And it got to a point where, like, I had been, like, going to meetings and, like, working with my sponsor and doing these different things for long enough that it wasn't, like, it didn't feel comfortable anymore. I started to feel that, like, guilt, shame, and remorse for the things, for my actions that I was taking. And I decided to do my sexual inventory, you know? And I got to put pen to paper, and I got to see, like, where I was wrong. And not just my sexual inventory, but my regular inventory, you know? But as far as that goes, I got to see, like, where the things that it just talked about. Like, I enjoyed creating jealousy. Like, it made me feel good if you were jealous. Like, all these different things that are, like, not normal, not healthy behavior. They were things that, like, I really wanted to hold on to. And so I got to look down, like, get to the causes and conditions of what was going on, and I started making amends, and that's sometimes awkward. And as far as my ex-husband goes, it's kind of a difficult situation. I'm finally in a place where I feel like I do owe an amends and that I did have a part in that, and that I wasn't the perfect wife. Like, I didn't know how to be a wife. I didn't know how to do any of these things. I didn't know how to be a girlfriend. I didn't know how to be loving. I didn't know how to be kind. I was mean. I, you know what I mean? Like, I just, it wasn't, I definitely had a part in that. And, I'm to the place right now where I'm willing and able and ready to make amends to him. And we've talked a little bit, and he's been in AA. He knows what it's about. He says he's willing to meet me. He works a lot, so it's been a little bit hard. And I also need to keep in the back of my mind that, like, he's still together with the woman that he got together with while we were together. Does that even make sense? So it's like, I don't get to go and, like, run havoc in their relationship today either. I don't get to go and be like, it's your fault. Like, you guys did this. Like, and I get to make my amends. Like, that's not how it works. And I have to be respectful of what he has. And so it hasn't worked out yet. And my sponsor tells me as long as I'm willing, and I completely am. And I try. We're on, like, opposite sides of, you know what I mean? And if I'm in his area, I'll let him know. I touch base with him every couple weeks to see what his day off is. And maybe he's not ready to hear it, or maybe it's uncomfortable for him, or I don't really know. But all I know is, like, I have to be 100% willing if the opportunity presents itself that I can make those amends. And that's all I can really do as far as that goes. And so another thing, so it's just like going forward, after I get to make my list of my ideals and what I'm looking for and what's important to me in a relationship, I get to, like our speaker last night was talking about, I get to turn around and say, like, well, what am I, do I even have these things? Like, you know what I mean? Like, do I have these things to offer to anybody? And the answer was no, like, I didn't. And I went on this process of, like, finding out who I was and, like, learning to love myself and, just really, like, being okay with who I am, and, like, if I'm in a relationship or not in a relationship, like, I'm okay with that, you know? And so, so what I try to do today is I have this list of ideals, and it's a goal to work towards. It's not the end-all, be-all. It says in there later on, like, if it's to be the end-all, be-all, like, will we drink, maybe, or something. That hasn't been my experience. I've fallen short of my ideals many times. I don't think you ever have to take a drink again, regardless of what your ideals are or not. You can come in here and you can stay sober, and it doesn't have to be related, one thing or another. And today I get to, like, go on dates with people, you know, and, like, learn, like, if we're not compatible, like, that's okay. You know, like, in AA, like, first date, coffee shop, second date, moving truck. Like, that's how I know how to work. Like, that's what I'm good at. Like, I know how to, like, move you in and, like, try and fix you. And so what I get to practice today is not doing that, you know, like, not taking those actions. And another thing that's, like, really important for me is, like, not sleeping with people right away. Like, putting more value on myself than just sex, you know what I mean? And I know today that I'm worth that. And so I go out with these dates on dates with people. So I get to go out on dates with people, and I get to, you know, like, have a real relationship, like a real relationship that I would want to have in my life, that I feel comfortable with, that I feel proud of, that I'm not ashamed of, that I'm not uncomfortable with. And it's slow going. I talk to my sponsor a lot, and I'll be like, I like to go home after work and lay in my bed and, like, play Scrabble on Facebook. It's kind of my thing. Like, I'm really tired. Like, I just want to hang out, like, in my bed alone with nobody. And then I call my sponsor every day, and I'll be talking to her, and I'll be like, but, you know, it'd just be so nice if I had somebody. And she's like, Carrie Ann, like, do you expect them to fall through the ceiling? Like, you're, like, it's the same as anything else. It's, like, it's so funny. Like, everything that is in there about the sexual inventory is the same as anything else. Like, it doesn't mean anything if you don't take any action. And that's been a big thing in my sobriety. And some days I'm, like, more willing than not. And unfortunately, pain is a great motivator to do anything. But, like, slowly but surely, like, if I keep practicing these things that I've learned, and I keep reminding myself that I have an ideal to work towards, like, I know that I'll be okay. And I know today that I'm okay regardless of anything. Like, I'm okay just being me. I'm okay showing up anywhere just alone by myself. In fact, it's funner. Funner's not a word. I get that. A lot of my friends, like, will complain, you know, about having to be in a relationship. And I get to go and, like, do these things that I want. And, like, I know in my heart that, like, God's getting somebody ready for me. You know what I mean? Like, God's getting somebody ready for me, and, like, when the time is right, it'll be right. And for now, like, I get to go and do what I want. Like, I get to go to Arizona and go to ASCII. I get to travel all over and do all these different things. And I'm really just having a great time, like, getting to know me and, like, getting myself ready to be that ideal in that relationship as well. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Please welcome our third speaker, John, from Salt Lake City.
Hi, my name's John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
So, you know, before I say anything, all my, any experience, any knowledge, any wisdom that I've gained from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was from the fellowship and through the step work. So if you hear something, it's been stolen and it's been peddled because I stood on the shoulders of giants, you know, in order to get where I'm at today. There was nothing innately in myself that I was able to do by myself. Like it says in the book, I could not have, with years of self-discipline, got to where I am today. So if you're hearing this again for the second time, or you're hearing something that you've heard from somewhere else, maybe that's your God talking to you, that you should pay attention. I would like to start off with, there's something that somebody does before they speak that I really like, and Lois Wilson, the founder of Al-Anon, she says that in each meeting she likes to invite God in the moment of silence. So I'm not saying God's not here, and I see God in every one of you, but if you could, let's just take a moment of silence and ask God to be here. Thank you. So, straight pepper diet, right? So, I get a call from Fast Eddie a couple of months back, and he tells me that I need to speak on a panel. And he tells me what panel it is. He says it's sex and relationships, right? And I told him, what the fuck am I going to tell? What am I going to talk about on a sex and relationship panel? There's like 2 pages in the goddamn big book. And I told him, no. It's like, I'm not going to speak on this panel. Like, I'm not going to be, like, the arbiter of anybody's sex conduct, right? And so he's like, John, I'm going to tell you something that my sponsor told me anytime I'm asked to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I say yes. So I'm going to ask you again. Lo and behold, I stand before you now. So, you know, like it says in the book, you know, straight pepper diet, you know, I'm glad that there's, I actually did some research, like I mentally masturbated myself for about 2 weeks before this, trying to like phonetically describe the syntax of the big book, capitalization, punctuations, how many times it's mentioned in the 12 and 12 in the big book. And like, in case you're wondering, like, they actually mention sex a lot more than they do relationships. So that kind of gives you an indicator of like how high on the list it is for a priority for alcoholics. So when somebody says it's not a big deal in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I relate to the book for my answer. You know, as far as with like it says, you know what, like the question is posed. You know, where it talks about some people would have no flavor for our fare. Some people would have us on a straight pepper diet. You know, what are we to do about this? You know, it says we put it down on paper. That means to me that if I'm not in that space where I'm able to put things down on paper and I don't know that, then I shouldn't be getting into that situation. Because I don't have that tool available. That's just my experience. You know, I go to the book, and if I don't have that tool available and I'm getting into that situation, I'm going to be around a barbershop and I'm going to get my hair cut. You know, so, you know, I really, really just want to qualify myself real quick. I love the fact that you guys read that, you know, that first paragraph about qualifying yourself as an alcoholic. If you're a newcomer here and you don't give a shit about sex, I mean, you haven't taken a shower in 3 weeks, you're just trying not to drink, you know, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's 2 things that qualify me as an alcoholic. I lost the power of choice and I lost the power of control. You know, there were times when I said when I would go out and I would drink and it was just a couple, it was just to go out to the game, it was just to hang out and be a part of the guys. And it never happened that way. You know, I could never control my drinking. You know, and the second thing is that I would wake up after those times when I promised myself I wasn't going to do it again. And I have that deep black blackness right in the bottom of my gut. I say, I am not going to do this again. I am not going to create, like, World War III in my personal relationships and within myself and do that. I am not, and I believe it. I know I'm not going to do it. And I'm drunk or I'm high again that day. I lost the power of choice. If you identify with that, welcome. We have a solution to that. You do not have to drink anymore if you want to or you don't want to. you know, and to qualify myself for this sex panel, my first drink was a Mike's Hard Lemonade, and I'm from Salt Lake City, so I was in the predominant religion up there. You know, I was Mormon, and I was seminary president. I knew all my scripture masteries. You know, I was very active in the youth group out there. You know, absolutely nothing. I didn't take my first drink till I was 16, and I came home with a summer for my brother where I just pretended I was his fraternal twin so I could drink and go out and hang out with his friends. And, well, not drink, but hang out with his friends while they drink. And, you know, that whole trying to be somebody else that I didn't want to be, because I feel that there is something innately different about me, that I am an alcoholic, that just when I found alcohol, it gave me the ability to curb the restlessness, the irritability, the discontent. It was my solution, because up until that point, church, friends, being the class clown, good in school, none of that actually solved that, so it gave me that relief, you know. And so I my parents were out of town. I came home early before the school year on my sophomore year, and my friend needed a place where him and his girlfriend could have sex, and that was, yeah, you can come over, it's completely fine. And so, being the selfish alcoholic, I said, bring somebody for me. So he comes over and he brings a couple of Mike's Hard Lemonade, and I pass the sacrament. I have, as the Mormons call it, it's a word of wisdom where I have my body as a temple and I'm not going to do these things. But, you know, this is, in my belief, the curious mental twist of alcoholism, where I see somebody feeling better and I have this innate restlessness in the bottom of my soul and I want to cure that. And it just looks like you have something more than I've got. So when they started pouring these out, I said, yeah, I'll have them. And somewhere between the end of the first, the end of the first and the beginning of the second, I felt that. You know, that was like, there was like a sunrise in my body. My skin tingled. You know. And some of you are probably jonesing right now after I say that. You know, so you know. It's mental and physical. So for me, like having that, like I said, long story short. So I had the drink, we decided to go shrieking, that didn't end up happening. So we got into a hot tub, and by the end of the night, I ended up having group sex in my bed with this girl and this, my friend's, my best friend's girlfriend. And I was known as 138 for the rest of my high school career, and just divide that by two, and you know what that means. It's the page where we talk about in this book. So, like, that qualifies me for alcoholism, right? And that qualifies me, I think, for this panel. And so, like, that being said, like, I am one day, I'm going to church and I'm doing all these things, and then the next day, I am known as, like, some, like, group sex having, like, crazy, wild dude. And I like that. Like, I like the attention. I like alcoholism. And I continued it and I pursued it. And, you know, I'm allergic to hops. I can't drink beer. I go into anaphylactic shock. Tells you about the allergy, right? And I still got here. Tells you about the power of alcoholism. You know, so long story short, I'm not going to go into my drinking career. But I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, sponsored by the great judiciary system of Salt Lake City, Utah, because I tried the geographical. I lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because it's Bruce City. I lived in Vegas for a long time, you know, because it was Sin City. You know, I had every, like financial, like physical, material thing that the world told me that I needed, like everything that you see that I thought that I needed to feel good on the inside, and it never cured it. It made my hunger worse, because it's like when you're hungry, if you eat dirt, it'll kind of curb your hunger for a little bit, but you're still going to be hungry. And that's what my drugs, that's what alcoholism did to me. You know, it kind of curbed the hunger, but it never really sustained it. It never really quenched that thirst. And so, you know, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I feel really bad for you people. I thought none of us came here willingly. I thought everybody was sponsored by a court system and a court card. So I got up to a podium like this, and I told you what I had been telling everybody in my life. You know, told you what you ever wanted to hear, or wherever the parole officer was somewhere in this room, so you would think I was good and I can get my get out of jail free card. Somebody comes up to me after the meeting and takes me downstairs in our Alano club where there's a cafeteria, and he says, I want to give you something. And I thought I got it. I was like, yes, finally, I can get you off my ass so I can do what I want to do. He pays this lady some money over the counter and he hands me a blue book. And he says, call me when it hurts. You know, and I was confused. I was baffled. I didn't know that you could see me as an alcoholic armed with the tools of this program. You can see through the bullshit that nobody else can. You can see through the pain that I have on the inside, no matter what I tell you. And that's what that person did. I've never seen that person again, but I thank God every day for that person because I'm here in this room. And so I sponsored myself, which I don't suggest doing. I read the book. I thought Bill was a douchebag. And I get to the part more about alcoholism, and I thought it was going to teach me how to drink. Because you always have those things where people tell you, you know, drink a Gatorade before you go to bed, which ended me up wetting the bed, you know, or drink, like, clear liquors before brown ones, or, you know, all these crazy things that I tried. Like, it talks about more about alcoholism. And it says, if you don't think you're a real alcoholic, try some controlled drinking. So I was like, God damn it, the book's telling me to drink. Finally, a chapter I can identify with. So I went out to the bar, and I actually drank. I took my brother, who was still in the disease at this at that time, and I lined up my shots on the bar, and I did that. And by the end of the night, it didn't end up just being those five shots. So I come home to that big book on my bed, and it's still at that page where it says if you can't control your drinking, you might have a problem. You know, and I was able to come back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and see that you guys were actually doing this because you wanted to stay sober. That's my story as far as like how I got here within reference to the topic. I'd just like to say that like the book says, I'm a firm believer that when I came into this program, probably the most brutal thing was is I had to leave the closest people in my life. And I'm not talking about a woman. I had a very broken home from a very early age, and I was told as a young child that you stick with your brothers. Me and my brothers are about 18 months apart, and we went everywhere. Everywhere that I went, they came with me. And when I came into this program, I had to leave them. And, I was told by somebody in the program that you cannot give this to them. The only thing that you can do is by attraction. And it hurt to see them in pain, and it hurt to see that I had been the one that had caused them to be in that pain because I was the instigator, and I knew that I couldn't give them the solution that I had. And I was told the only thing I could do was live the principles in the best way that I could so that I could shine a light and remind them of what they might have lost. I can honestly tell you today, Dustin came in 4 months later, and my little brother just came in, he's got 90 days. You know, and that is a... No, that's not for me, that's for this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And God damn it, if you are a man in this program, you do not give a woman enough time to find that solution, to find that connection with God, what the fuck are you doing? I'm not here to harbor a resentment. My sponsor told me that it is much better to give a resentment than harbor one. And God damn it, I see it every time in a newcomer meeting where you have women that are broken, that are coming in here that are looking for a solution, and they can't get it. Because somebody like me comes in there with a selfish motive. Now, I'm not going to be the arbiter of your sex conduct, but I know what feels right in my soul. And I know that we share a common creator, whatever the fuck you call it. But I know it's right. And I know I have a moral compass. And God damn it, you can do whatever the hell you want, but let them get well. Please. You know the numbers of Alcoholics Anonymous. Far more men are in this program than women. So few recover that they can actually carry that message. In my home state. You know. So that's my soapbox. And you know, and I'm not willing to compromise on a sexual ideal. And if you want to talk about, if you look up the word ideal, it's a thought. It's nothing that actually manifests. It's something to work towards too. Like Bill talks about, like humility, perfect humility is not something that I will ever have, nor do I have the delusions that it will ever be mine, but it is simply a goal. Something to hold within my heart and continue to trudge towards. And that's what my sexual ideal is. And you know what? I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous that gave me the ability to allow me to have forgiveness for those places that I've been in the past. Because I am not one that, I don't believe that I have the power to forgive anybody. And like it says in this book, I do not do anything by myself. I simply get me out of the way so I can have a God come through and show you how powerful He is. And I believe that power is in forgiveness. And until I am ready to forgive the things that I have done in myself and show that forgiveness to my fellow man, you know, I have nothing to do. And because I'm so spiritually enlightened, I'm going to let you continue to do what we talked about in the traditions and beat your head against the wall until you do it. But I ask and I plead that you don't do it anymore. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.